Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Tonight, the show is brought to you by ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. All the best news and articles from the whole entire wrestling community at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Make sure you get there and visit it on a daily basis. Great insight, great articles, and also make sure you check us out on Twitter and Facebook at PW Powerhouse on Twitter and Facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse. We've got a fantastic interview for you tonight with the one and only Maria Kanellis, but we'll get to that in a minute. Right now, enjoy the show, episode number 27 of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vampides.
Okay, everybody, I promise you a big interview tonight right here on episode number 27. And I have come through, and she has come through as well. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you the one and only Maria Kanellis. Maria, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am awesome. I'm so happy that you could join us tonight. This is exciting. Blog Talk Radio is behind us on this interview, and this is awesome. Thanks so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. We have my good friend and co-host, Will TLD Vampides, on the line as well. What's up, Will?
I'm doing just wonderful. I got my popcorn and my iced tea right here next to me, and I'm ready to talk to Maria. How you doing tonight, Maria? Everything going well?
Everything's going great. I'm snowed in, but I'm happy.
Yeah.
We're about to get it here on the East Coast shortly. And I'd like to introduce also my other co-host that I have on a weekly basis. He's also the host of Oh, You Didn't Know Radio each and every Wednesday night right here on blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio. It's John Dimitelli. John, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's up, Jay? Hey, Maria, how's it going?
Good, very good.
And hey,
all
Will.
Right, Maria. We've got all kinds of questions for you tonight, and I just want to kick it off with this. And it's pretty obvious that you and Mike have kind of been conspicuous by your absence from Ring of Honor lately. And they had a big show last Saturday. There was a big angle that went down at the end. And I thought for sure there was going to be something, but obviously there wasn't. What's your status right now with Ring of Honor Wrestling?
I'm still with Ring of Honor, but I'm sure that you've heard Mike did go for a tryout for WWE. And until we know more about that, we can't really say or do anything with Ring of Honor. He's the reason why I'm there, and until we work out that, there's really nothing we could do.
Okay, that's cool. That makes perfect sense. I also recently saw a picture with you and Jeff Jarrett. Does that have anything to do with anything going on right now?
Well, you know I can't tell you about that.
But
I did see him. I seen him at a signing. There was tons of people there. You know, everyone from Jeff Jarrett to Christy Hemme to Lillian Garcia to Kelly Kelly. I mean, there was a whole lot of people there. So, you know, that was the reason why I got to take a photo with him. He was sitting right next to me. So I took a picture with him and his lovely wife.
Yeah, Jeff Jarrett's awesome. I'm not the type of guy that reads wrestling news. Like, I know a lot of the fans out there, and I might be the only wrestling radio host that doesn't read the news sites. I just don't. I don't like it. I generally like to be surprised, and you know, just I like to be a wrestling fan above all else, but I'm also a bit of a journalist, and, you know, we have a lot of questions for you tonight, but I'm going to bring in another one of my co-hosts that's a regular on the show. It's my man, Topher. Toph, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
We are great. Yeah, we've got the lovely Maria on the line, and I'm going to kick it to
Will.
Let me kick it to Will first. Will, let's get a question for Maria tonight, man.
Yeah, all right. So I have, since it is WrestleMania time, and I'm curious, because this is one of my favorite on-screen relationships, I'd like to know a little bit about how you and the whole Santino Marella got involved, because that was one of my favorite storylines going into WrestleMania. So can you talk a little bit about how that developed and how you feel it went?
Well, it was funny because it was I was speaking with the head writer of Raw, Brian, about what I wanted to do next. And I was like, what about Santino? And he's like, that would work. And then it just started from there. Me and Santino worked together down at Ohio Valley Wrestling. And so we had been friends for a long time. And, you know, it just started and it kind of stemmed from there. We had a really good time with it. And there were many occasions where I wanted to crack up and laugh at him because he is by far one of the funniest people that I've ever met and worked with. And it was great. And there were so many times when we were just starting to, you know, get to know our roles and stuff that I would tell him, you know, that's okay. If you mess up, I'll just shake my butt or something. And that always calmed him down a bit. So we had a lot of fun doing that.
Well, one of my favorite moments was actually the Stone Cold Stunner that I guess you took from him in the beer truck. So talk a little bit about being part of that.
Oh, my God. Stone Cold's amazing. He's one of the best guys that I've ever worked with. And it's so relaxing in there with some of the guys. And he's one of them that just makes you feel comfortable. And I just have always been a big fan of Stone Cold. So getting to work with him was kind of like a dream come true.
Awesome. I'm happy.
Great. Maria, I got a question from a fan on Facebook. His name is Steve Tilker, and there was an incident that took place recently at a Ring of Honor show where a certain fan got a little bit too hands-on, and you released a statement that was very classy on your part, and you kind of let your voice be heard, but what he wants to know is your thoughts on the incident now that it's been a while since what happened, and do you think that these wrestling companies do enough to protect women from conduct of fans?
Oh, yeah, the wrestling companies do enough. I think that one thing that, you know, fans have to remember is we are still actors and actresses. We still have things to do while we're out there. And people have to be very careful about, you know, how much involvement they do. Because if I was supposed to be there to catch someone and someone's grabbing me, that's not a good thing. It's, you know, it could end up in disaster. So fans have to remember that it's still a show. We're still actors and actresses, and we do have things that we have to do when we're out there. So I didn't appreciate being felt up. I've said it on numerous occasions that if I was Marissa Tomei, you wouldn't be throwing dollar bills at me just because I was a stripper in one role that I acted in a movie. So, you know, fans have to remember that. You know, as close and friendly as we can get during signings, during the show, you have to kind of keep hands off.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great response to that question. And on kind of that same level with, you know, because obviously, you know, those male fans aren't going to reach out and touch male wrestlers. Well, maybe some of them would, but, you know, the majority probably wouldn't. And I just want to know, is it difficult being a female wrestler in a sport that is predominantly male-driven, and what obstacles have you really had to overcome, especially in your career in WWE?
You know, just being considered an equal performer, that's probably one of the biggest things. You know, there's such a bad light put on female wrestling, and we work just as hard, and maybe even harder some occasions, because we do have to get up an hour earlier to put makeup and do our hair and do all these things during the morning that the guys don't have to do. They can roll out of bed, fix their hair, and they're good to go. We have to spend time doing all of that stuff. So a lot of times we have to be up earlier in the morning. We have to make sure that we still look good when we're going out to the ring and even after our matches. So in some ways, I think it's tougher because of that. Also, if a 120-pound girl hitting a mat or a 220-pound guy, you know, it affects our bodies a little different. You know, it definitely jars us a bit more. But, you know, the guys work so very hard, and so do the girls. And I think in a lot of ways, companies like Shimmer and Shine and, you know, some of the work that they get to do on Ring of Honor, and, of course, the girls at TNA, they do get an opportunity to spend a lot of time out in that ring. And I think that definitely helps with female wrestling. And I think that there is a great appreciation for it, because if you look at the numbers of DVD resales or the comments that are put out there, men and women alike, the you want to see these strong, powerful women wrestling.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing about female wrestling, too, is you mentioned Shimmer and Shine and some of these other companies where it's all female wrestling, and there is an absolutely huge market out there, I would think, that WWE and TNA don't tap into as much as they probably should. And that leads me to my next question. The WWE divas aren't utilized the way they should be. I mean, you have to agree with me there. And do you think that you should have been utilized in a more, you know, professional wrestler type of role than just kind of like eye candy a lot of the time?
You know, if you would have asked me this 3 years ago, I might have a different answer. But the way that I feel about it now is I was very blessed. I got to work with such tremendous talent. I mean, I worked with everybody. I worked with Ric Flair. I got to work with Dolph Ziggler. I worked with Santino, which we mentioned earlier. I mean, I got to work with Cena. I was in the ring with Edge. I mean, I got to work with Kurt Angle and Umaga. And, you know, I got to work with everybody. And so I was very blessed because I got to work with some incredibly talented men as well as every single female there was out there. So looking back at it now, I feel extremely blessed. Is there a way that you can do it that, you know, would involve the girls more right now? Of course there is. I feel as if the women's division right now is very depleted in the WWE, and that's probably a huge struggle for them. They definitely need more females on board. And I know that Paige has been doing some house show matches, and that'll help because she's a tremendous talent. You know, and so there just needs to be more women in order to do it. And I also remember the days of Trish Stratus, which she would have very funny backstage interactions with Triple H and Stephanie and with The Rock. Or, you know, she got to do those while she was also wrestling, which I feel as if is the best way to go about it. Because not only are you being seen in the role of a feminine, you know, way, but also she's wrestling. And so you're seeing both sides of the coin, and you're also seeing her more, which helps her character out so much, which I think that is a big way to change things. And I think that AJ would be an ideal candidate for that.
Yeah, I agree, too. AJ, I feel like they've kind of taken a little bit of a step back with her, but I think it's also a kind of a master plan that they have because she was in the spotlight for the majority of 2012. And she's got a lot of charisma, great talent in there. And so are you. You're one of the most recognizable divas in professional wrestling, I would say, and especially in WWE history. And no problem. I definitely think you are. You're obviously one of the most popular. You were Diva of the Year and Playboy Playmate, so on and so forth. I can just keep going on with your accolades. But I want to ask you about something that I was particularly interested in, and that was your appearance on Celebrity Apprentice. Now, I'm a big fan of that show. And they just had this all-star season kickoff where they brought back former contestants. Were you asked to come back to the show for the all-star season?
I was not. But you also have to remember that, you know, they're, of course, going to use some of the people that were the most popular or maybe ended up winning the show or just the most controversy this first time around because it's all about ratings. And so I completely understand that. And you know, that's the way that I would do a show as well. I would definitely bring back the people that I would think would bring the most attention to my show. And, you know, I kind of stayed on the straight and narrow the entire time I was on there, which was, you know, tough at times because I wanted to freak out or, you know, have a moment. But I didn't do that. And so I think that that's the direction that they went in. I don't know who in particular is on the cast. I didn't watch. But, you know, I think that that's why. But you never know. Maybe down the road sometime. It's all with any kind of show. It's like a soup. You can't put in the wrong ingredient or people won't watch.
That was very well said. I was pulling for you the entire time. My girlfriend was actually getting pretty annoyed because I was just pulling for you to win that show, and I don't really care about anybody else, and that's the truth.
Thank you.
No problem. I'd like to bring in one of my co-hosts who I put on hold for a while now, and that's John DiMaselli. John, you got any questions for Maria tonight?
Hey, yeah, first of all, I want to thank you again because at FWE, you actually went and got Mike out of the back for me for like 2 minutes, so again, I want to thank you for that. I was interested in the Dolph Ziggler storyline. Was that supposed to lead to a heel turn for you with him?
You know, it just kind of came about organically. And, you know, me and Dolph, again, we were friends. And so we started going down that path. But then when I went on Celebrity Apprentice, they kind of dropped it. So I don't know. It was starting to get to be WrestleMania season, so I think that that had a lot to do with the way things went. But you never know. I mean, I can't guess what goes on in their brains.
Right. No, no one can. Also, too, with the you were the 04 Diva Search, right? The Ashley Massaro one.
I was. No, not Ashley Massaro. I was actually
you were the Layla one.
Christy Hemme. No, Christy Hemme.
Oh, Christy.
We were the
Christy Hemme. Oh, that's right. Okay. Christy Hemme, that's right. Were they, when they had you guys out on Raw, were you guys training the rest of the nights, or did they just have you guys fly in for Raw?
We just came in for Raw.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's different to me, because it was from those, like, you didn't win the show, obviously, the Diva Search, but you made the roster. And what was that like? Did you think you were going to make the roster? Did you have a feeling you were going to make it anyway?
I did. I kind of always have a feeling about these things and where they're going to go. And I gave it my all, and I wanted to be there. And I was a huge fan of wrestling. So I was definitely the squeaky wheel when I left. I was calling and begging for a job afterwards. So, you know, I kind of knew that that's where I wanted to be. And so I made it happen. And, you know, after I left that evening, after I flipped off Carmella, I went to the back and they said, you know, call us in 2 weeks. So I called the very next week. And then they said, call us in 2 weeks. And I called the very next week. So, you know, it was something that I wanted. And so I really fought for it.
That's awesome. Yeah, we can kind of see that in your character throughout the years. Yeah, I could tell you were a wrestling fan and not just like a model that was trying to get in. You kind of tell those kind of things from a fan perspective, and I'm glad you actually were able to give us that insight. I'm going to have to ask you that question, but that was one thing I was going to ask. But another thing is, you know, John mentioned the turning heel type thing with Dolph Ziggler, whether it was leading to that, but recently you started to work heel, which I believe was, you know, probably the first time in your career you really got a heel run with Mike in Ring of Honor. And how does it feel to finally be on that side of things, not have to, like, play up the crowd? You could actually, you know.
I love it all. But it's so much fun. It's so much sexier to be a heel than it is to be out there and pandering to the crowd. And I feel like at this point in my life, it's what I want to do. And so I get to do it now. And Mike has made it amazing for me, because whenever I have a question or whenever I need something, or, you know, I can lean on him. And, you know, in the last few weeks, I've worked heel and wrestled heel 4 times. And, you know, those are the only 4 times I've ever worked as a heel in a match. And so it's definitely a learning process. But it comes a whole lot more naturally than me as a babyface.
That's awesome. And I recently heard that you are the FWE Women's Champion, and you're a heel there. You're a hated heel. And how does that feel, getting the FWE Women's Championship?
It was amazing. I got it on my birthday last year. So,
wow.
And I lost it for a couple months, and then I'd gotten it back. But I've had it for a while now. I should probably know how long, but I do not know. But it was amazing. It was, you know, to me, it was my women's championship. To me, it was, you know, it was very important, because I never got that opportunity when I was at WWE, you know, and we tried. We worked really hard to get there, me and, you know, Michelle McCool and, you know, a few others were really working towards getting me to be a champion. Even though I wasn't the greatest wrestler in the world, it was a nice story, because I was always the fighter. I was always the one that was getting beat. And it would have been so fun to even have it for a day. Did I deserve it as a wrestler? No. But you know, how many champions have there been that didn't necessarily deserve it, but it would have been a great story. I got to do it in SWE, and I'm so thankful that they gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, the buildup was really there in WWE. I remember that, and I was pretty surprised they didn't pull the trigger on that because it was there. The opportunity was there for that, you know, I hate to use the term, but Cinderella story type of deal where the underdog can kind of pull out the big victory, and the trigger wasn't pulled. Why do you think that was?
I think that it would have been pulled if I would have stayed past Celebrity Apprentice. But after Celebrity Apprentice, my contract was up. I was trying new things. I was really ready to try my hand at other things. And so I fought back a bit against my contract and was asking for more freedom in that contract, which they weren't willing to give. And so, you know, I didn't end up re-signing.
Yeah, that's a damn shame, but who knows? Maybe you'll end up back there someday. I'm going to bring in Toph, who's one of my co-hosts as well. Topher, man, you got any questions for Maria tonight?
Yeah, I have a question. Oh, first off, how you doing today, Maria? Doing okay?
I'm doing good.
Oh, well, my question is, how did it feel when you finally won Diva of the Year? I thought that was a really cool accomplishment, and at the time when you won, I thought it was going to lead to you getting a push, and then you were kind of released afterwards, and I remember at the time I was just really confused.
You know, when I won that, it was incredible. I wasn't expecting it, except for one little moment during the day. I was wearing an outfit, and I was asked to wear something even dressier, and so I kind of knew something was up. And so I ended up in that pink dress that I wore. That was, you know, it was an evening gown. And so I kind of knew something was up, but you know, when I won, I honestly was just so I was so happy and so humbled, and it was nice.
Okay, that's cool. That's pretty much the only question I had. Thank you.
Uh huh.
Maria, do you mind taking any callers tonight? Is that okay?
Of course. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to kick it to the old 516 area code, 516. You're on the air with Maria. What's your name and where are you from?
Matthew Holly, Westbury, Long Island, New York. Back
What's up, PWP.
How you doing? How you doing tonight, Maria? It's an honor. It's an honor to talk to you. I mean, you had a stellar career in WWE. Now you're in Ring of Honor. I know you're happy to be the first lady of Ring of Honor. But to me, what is it like to be in Ring of Honor with Mike Bennett?
Oh, I'm so happy that I get to work with my best friend. You know, we always joke about being our favorite traveling partner, which he is my favorite traveling partner. So to be able to work with him and go into this new part of my life is incredible. I can't believe how well things worked out because it wasn't expected. We weren't going to start in Ring of Honor working together on a consistent basis, and it just fell into place. So it's amazing.
That's my question, man. I'll be looking forward to working with you guys again.
All right, great, Matthew. Thanks a lot for calling in. And while we're taking callers, I'm going to take one more call for Maria tonight. I got an 832 area code. You're on the line with Maria. What's your name? Where you're from?
Yes, how you doing today, man? This is DJ Malone calling from Chicago.
Hey, how you doing,
hello,
man?
Hello there, Chicago.
How you doing? Maria, I just had a quick question. Knowing that you were, you know, in the Divas division, what do you feel about it as of right now?
We were talking about that a little bit earlier. I just feel as if it's a bit depleted right now, but there's some tremendous talent down in FDW, and I feel as if when that starts moving up, the Divas division is going to completely change. There's one girl down there. She's using the First Lady name, which I'm wondering what she's going to do with it, but I'm hoping that all the girls are extremely successful.
Well, definitely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning me in.
Hey, thanks. No problem. Thanks for listening. And make sure you listen every week because we've got a lot of great content each and every week. We've got two weekly radio shows, sometimes three. Actually, I'm sorry. Let me go back on that. We have three weekly, sometimes four. We just premiered Flashback Friday last Friday night where we talked about WrestleMania 14 and what was a great conversation. So keep it tuned in to the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network. Now, this is a question I ask all our guests, Maria. I ask everybody this. There's two that we mainly, you know, talk about every single time. And I am so into physical fitness. I'm a big fan of staying in shape. And that's kind of where the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse name came from because I think powerhouse is a very, you know, powerful, broad term. And I'd just like to hear about your fitness routine. How do you keep in such amazing physical condition?
Thank you. I have my ups and downs, definitely. But I started doing DDP yoga, and that's really great, especially for my lower half. It has some great workouts for legs, and I love that because I build muscles so fast in my legs, and it's not even defined muscle. It's just they just look bulky. And so DDP yoga, definitely. I've been working out since I was 14 years old, so that's 17 years of being, you know, in the gym. And I do the elliptical machine. I vary in some ballet techniques and I lift very heavy, or very light, because I don't want to get heavy and bulky. So 5 pound weights usually. And I just try and keep with it. I try not to take too many days off because I feel like if I start taking a few days off, that's going to lead into a few weeks off, and then it's just going to be horrible trying to get back in shape. So, you know, I definitely try and stick with it and be consistent.
That's fantastic. Yeah, DDP yoga is something that I have, but I can't really get myself started on it because I'm so into my regular gym routine of going to the gym and doing my reps and my sets and yada, 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 and trying to, you know, put more weight on the bar and trying to lift heavier and everything. But I really think I should incorporate it into my routine. So you say that DDP yoga actually works and it does its job, right?
It does do its job, and definitely if you're consistently lifting, it's actually going to help your workout because it'll make you more flexible and less likely to be injured. It has definitely started to give me back a lot of my flexibility, and as wrestlers, you lose a lot of that, and you're also afraid to stretch a lot of times because it's very sore. It's, you know, you just start getting very tight, and so DDP yoga has given me back my flexibility in a lot of ways. So I usually do DDP yoga, and then I go to the gym, and then some days I'll just go to the gym. So I try and do DDP yoga probably 4 days a week, 5 days a week.
That's great. That's how I should incorporate it, I think. Start slowly and maybe just a few days a week rather than doing it every day.
Yeah, definitely, because even a little bit is going to help you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to come clean on something here. I got a little story to tell you, and it was your first night in Ring of Honor. I believe it was Final Battle 2011, if I'm not mistaken. And I was actually backstage at that show with a couple of my buddies. Will was one of them, and we were working with the Kevin Steen, Steve Corino angle that night as a security. We ran out and tried to stop Kevin Steen from killing El Generico. But we were backstage when the show kicked off, and we were all just kind of, you know, hanging back and staying out of everybody's way and just sitting up against the wall, just kind of, you know, watching what was going on. And you walked out, and it was the first time we have seen you that we saw you that night. And all of us, I think there was like 4 or 5 of us, our eyes just immediately went to you, and we were just staring as you walked by because you looked so amazingly sexy that night. It was just unbelievable. And Nigel McGuinness was actually walking the other way, and he saw us all staring at you, and he just waved his finger and, like, shook his head, like, what are you guys doing, you know? It was pretty funny. I figured I'd complain about that since I got you live on the air. And you were actually very nice. I actually went up to you and Mike after Mike's match that night, and I congratulated him, said I was a fan, and you were nice enough to sign my WWE encyclopedia. I had a fan mark out moment, and I actually talked to you a little bit about a practice that night, which was cool. And I just wanted to thank you for being so nice that night. It was really cool of you.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm glad I was nice. I always worry how I come off to people. I try and be nice and be present and when I communicate with people. And sometimes when I'm backstage, I get a little bit into my head about what I'm doing that night. So I'm glad that I was nice.
Yeah, yes. I'll tell you what, I went up to Shelton Benjamin pretty much the same way, and he was not near as nice as you were. But I like him. He's cool. I've talked to him on other occasions as well. But
Yeah,
I just wanted to just come clean with that and get it off my chest because I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And we actually started laughing out loud when Nigel was waving his finger at us. It was good. I'm going to bring Will back in because I know he's got some more questions for you tonight. So, my man, TLD, you're back in the line. What else you got for Maria tonight?
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that wonderful story with us, Jay. That's really great how we were doing a staring contest with Maria. That's really awesome.
Yeah,
thank you so much for sharing that.
But the thing about the contest was it wasn't at your eyes. It was at somewhere else. But
I know exactly where my eyes were, so don't worry about it. Okay, I have a question. I didn't ask you that night, but I'm a fellow Greek myself. Do you know any Greek?
I do not know. Love Greek food, but I do not know Greek.
Yeah, I'm with you. 100%. My dad's 100% Greek, and we don't know one thing. He just listens to Greek music, and that's it.
Yeah, my dad is 100% Greek as well, and I don't know a single word of it.
All right, good. We have something in common. All right, so I have to bring it up a little bit about the whole Playboy. Now, how did you get contacted about that? I think you were offered it before the WWE. I'm not sure, but could you talk a little bit about that experience about it since we're talking about staring contests and how you look? So, tell me about the Playboy.
Well, I actually was offered to do it when I was 19, and I turned it down. At the time, my sister was only 12, so I felt a little awkward doing it then. And so WWE, they asked me, and by that time, my sister was about to graduate high school, and I asked her if it was okay, and she said it was, so I went ahead and did it. Plus, when I was 19, I was still growing. I was still learning myself and who I was as a woman, so it didn't fit at that time, and by the time I was 25, I was ready. I was ready to do it, so I really am glad that I did, and when I'm 95 years old, I'm sure I'll look back at those photos and go, what happened?
Awesome. And I know you did the AfterBuzz TV a little bit, because I did watch that a little bit after Raw. How did you get into that? Is that still around today? Are you still involved with that? Or is that something that's been kind of passed now, since you have other things going on?
Well, I love AfterBuzz TV. Maria Menounos is a friend of mine, and it's her company. And, so she asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said, of course. And that's one of the reasons why I'm back involved with wrestling so much, because when I started doing AfterBuzz TV is when I realized how much I miss it. So she asked me to do it, and I did that for a while, and then recently I sold my house out in Los Angeles. So I'm not in L.A. right now, and so I'm not available to do AfterBuzz TV, but I cannot wait to be back out in L.A.
Yeah, very cool. And since WrestleMania season is coming up, any big plans on the weekend? Are you going to be around anywhere? I mean, I'm sure you're going to be at WrestleMania country. So are you going to be around for any big events coming up during the WrestleMania weekend?
I am. I'll be at WrestleCon both Saturday and Sunday. I'm also going to be at the Shenanigans Party downtown New York. So I'm going to be very involved that weekend, and then I'm hoping to sneak into the show.
Awesome. Actually, I'll be at that party as well, so I'll see you there.
Yeah, we're mainly all going to WrestleMania. I'll be at WrestleMania. I'll be at the Hall of Fame. Not sure if I'm going to the Shenanigans Party yet, but I would love to go there. I'm going to bring back in my other co-host, John, because I know he's got more questions for you tonight, and I'm going to bring him in just a second. We got a little load time here. John, got any more questions for Maria tonight, my man?
We asked Mike this when we had him on, but I figured get it straight from you directly. Being, you know, how goody-goody your WWE character was, how was the transition into where you are with him now in Ring of Honor?
Do you mean, like, was it tough for me, or do you mean,
yeah,
like,
was it an
how
easy
did
transition,
it happen?
Or was it, yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know, but I am a trained actress, so for me, it was a fun new role that I could play. And for me, it was very easy because I had Mike by my side. And so within 10 seconds of walking out with him, everybody's booing him. And so they boo me right along with it. So that was very easy. And it's so much fun for me. I love doing it. Every role that I've gotten since I've been working out in Los Angeles has been for a bad girl, has been for someone evil. So I don't know what WWE saw, but everybody else sees me as evil. So it's a lot of fun. I think it's nice to try something different. It's nice to work out some of those other skills that I have. And it's just starting for me. I love trying new things. I love being bad. So we'll see what happens next.
Yeah, definitely interested in what the future has for both of you guys.
All right, here's another one of our customary questions, and it's become somewhat of a tradition. Whenever we have a guest on, we also ask this question. Road stories. Now, you were on the road with WWE for a long time, straight through, and there had to have been some kind of awesome road stories that took place that you may not have told, that you could kind of give us an exclusive tonight. Can you give us, like, one of your most memorable, best road stories that you've ever had?
Well, there's a few road stories I can't tell you about.
Oh, no. Come on, tell us one of those. This is internet radio. This is internet radio.
Anything goes tonight. Oh, God, let me think. There was a night that a bunch of guys were shooting fireworks at our car. I thought we were going to die. It was terrible. you know, it's definitely that. God, let me think. We might have to come back to this one because I definitely will have to think on it a little bit.
Okay, we can come back. When it clicks, you just, you know, you let me know. You say, oh, I got a road story. Just let me know when it comes.
Okay,
I'll
let you know. But I think that the firework night was one of the scariest nights. Because it was me and Carlito and Umaga and Candace all in a car, and another car pulled up, and all of a sudden there's fireworks going off in the direction of our car. I thought we were going to die. All I could imagine was one of those fireworks going up the tailpipe, and then we would just be up in smoke. It wouldn't have been good at all.
Do you think it was some crazed wrestling fans, or just did they pick your car?
No, it was wrestlers. It was wrestlers that were shooting it at us. Yeah, it was wrestling.
It was a rib. That's awesome.
That's probably one of the craziest things that's ever happened.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty funny. Well, if you get another one that pops in, just let me know. But
I'll think about it.
I first wanted to say, and I wanted to say this at the beginning of the interview, and I screwed this up with Mike too, and we interviewed him couple weeks ago, but I wanted to say congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That is huge news. You two are a power couple in wrestling, and you know, you have the ability and the potential to become like a huge power couple, and I really hope it happens because I'm a big fan, and we'll see what happens there. But we're talking about Mike here. How has he affected not only your personal life, but your professional wrestling career to this point?
He kind of made me fall in love with wrestling all over again. He's so calm. He is one of the calmest people I've ever met. And so he just takes the edge off of everything. He just makes everything so easy. And that is one of the reasons why I fell in love with him, but it's also one of the reasons why it was okay for me to get back involved with wrestling as much as I am now. It's changed in that sense. And plus, it's nice to have someone that understands because this wrestling life is not an easy one, from the bumps and the bruises to being on the road to being exhausted at the end of the night. And you know, actually a funny story. One night I was talking to him, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he just says wrestling, and I knew that he was halfway to sleep, but it had nothing to do with our conversation, so I'll never forget that. But, like, I understand, because we do get to that point where we're so exhausted that you try and pay attention at the end of the night, but you know what? You can't. At a certain point, your body is just going to shut down, especially when you're sore and you're tired and you probably haven't eaten the best. And so he just made everything a lot easier and a smooth transition back into wrestling for me.
That's awesome, and it's great. And I really wish you guys the absolute best of luck. I'm going to go around the table one more time, and we're going to pop off some final questions for you tonight. Maria, tell us, you got anything else for Maria tonight?
Yes, Maria, will you be working with Stone Cold ET? Because I love that guy, and I think you two working together would be awesome.
He's been on one of the shows with me before. So funny. I can't believe what a huge phenomenon he is.
Stone Cold ET is awesome, and I hope to see you guys working pretty soon. Oh, and I like your matches with Winter. Great matches.
Thank you. Thank you. She's incredible. She really is an incredible talent that hasn't been able to really spotlight it. And so I'm not only in the ring, but also any acting work she does is just incredible.
Yeah, I met her recently. She is awesome, and she's so beautiful. Like, you know, she didn't really get a fair shake in WWE or TNA. And, yeah, she's awesome. I agree with you there. Toph, any final words?
Oh, no, that's it. Good interview, guys. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Topher. Let's go back to my man, Will. I know he's probably got something else for you, knowing Will. TLD, man, you're back on the air. Any final questions or thoughts for Maria tonight?
Well, what does that mean? I mean, I always have questions. What does that mean?
Don't think into it, buddy. Just go with the flow.
Okay. All right. One question I would like, actually more of advice I would say to people who are listening and perhaps maybe are interested in getting into professional wrestling, based on your experience, what would you say is the advice you would give to those people who are looking to break into the business?
A few things. You know, you have to find a training school, and you got to find out who is the best trainer right now. And you can do that as easy as listen to some interviews and find out who your favorites are getting trained by. Find out where those training schools are. So that's definitely one thing. Another thing is make sure you know who you are as a person, because this business will eat you up and spit you out if you don't know who you are as a person. Another thing is find your moral base, your friends, your family, your own personal morals, because you will need them to stand on and stand with and stand behind you. Because, like I said, when you're on the road as much as you are at WWE, 250 to 300 days a year, you need someone to remind you who you are. And because at the end of the day, we all got into wrestling because we love it, or we grew to love it, and that's why we're here. And so sometimes people need to remind you of that. And this isn't something that's going to happen overnight. I mean, for some of us, you know, I went in the Diva Search, but that wasn't the beginning for me either. I started modeling when I was 14, so I had already had 8 years in the entertainment business before I ever got a real big hit. So this doesn't happen overnight, and you can't expect it to. And just because you work one day out of the week and you're a wrestler one night out of the week doesn't mean you can hack it 250 to 300 days a year. I've seen many a guys change their personalities completely when they end up on the road that many days. So find out if you really want it.
Okay, Will, anything else? I think we've all
seen that. I just want to thank you, Maria, for coming on to the show. It's really great to hear you. Great to talk to you again since the Ring of Honor show. And looking forward to seeing everything you guys, you and Mike, do in your future. So thank you for coming on. We do appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
And we're going to go back to my man, John Dimaselli, JCD. Any final questions, comments, or thoughts for Maria tonight?
Will actually took the question I was going to ask, which was the advice and also, you know, the experience going into the Diva search. So I just, you know, again, just like everyone else, you know, thanks for coming on. And again, I just can't say it enough how awesome you were at FWE, you know, and your match with Angelina Love was really good. It was, I was really shocked that WWE never put you in that type of position to perform as well as you did. I mean, the match was really good. It was really awesome. And, you know, yeah, you know, and the character that you and Mike have is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're basically a modern-day Macho Man and Elizabeth without the domestic abuse that goes on in the relationship that Macho and Elizabeth have. You know, I don't know what happens behind the curtain, but I think it's safe to say, because we talked to Mike, and he seems like a really, really nice guy, considering he's such a dick on TV. He's just such a nice dude. And that's something, you know, working with him and having that interview with him, and it was very successful for our show, and hopefully a lot of wrestling fans out there got to hear from him that maybe they didn't know a lot about him. Maybe they were just WWE marks and weren't into the Ring of Honor thing, and they got to hear from a future superstar who I truly believe that he will end up in the WWE. I don't know what's going on, but I truly believe he will be there, and hopefully you're there with him, Maria. And I just have one final question for you tonight before we go off the air and with you anyway. But the thing is, I always hear about, like, backstage at WWE that there are certain agents that really work with just the divas. I hear Fit Finley is one of the guys, maybe Dean Malenko. But when it comes to those agents backstage, who was your biggest, I guess, inspiration and the person that helped you along the most as far as your wrestling was concerned?
Definitely Fit. Fit was the one that was working with us. And I'll never forget the first time I had a match that wasn't a pillow fight or something like that was when I was overseas. And, you know, Fit really helped me through it. And I'll never forget that. He's always been so great with me. He gives it to you straight, which is nice, because you don't always want to hear, oh, you know, that was great, that was great. No, it wasn't. You can feel it when it's not great. So he was great with me. I also talked to Vince a lot. You know, he was wonderful. Triple H was great with me, too. I'd ask him advice on character stuff mostly. But so he was wonderful. Dustin, you know, Goldust, he was great. William Regal, oh, my gosh, he used to spend so much time with me and Layla. So I think that there are so many different avenues that you can get help at WWE, and these guys want to help you. And, you know, so... So definitely Fit first and foremost, but there were so many people.
That's great to hear. And, you know, any final words for, like, your fans out there? Where can they see you in the near future? What are you up to, this weekend, next weekend?
Well, I'm actually doing a seminar coming up here in a few weeks on the 23rd, and I'll post it on my Twitter page. And that's Maria L. Canellis is my Twitter. I do not have a Facebook that I run, and I'm putting this out there again. I do not have a Facebook. So if you think that you're friends with me on Facebook, you're not. I have a fan page, and that's Official Maria Canellis. That's it. I don't talk to people on Facebook because I don't like it. So if you want to get in touch with me or you want to book me for something, it's Maria Canellis Bookings at Gmail, and you will talk to my booking agent, and then we'll see if we can work stuff out. But like I said, I don't have a Facebook. I don't run a Facebook. And you can also watch YouTube videos of me and Mike on Prodigy Superstar. And Mike Bennett's Twitter is ROH Mike Bennett. I think that's it. You can catch me on Ring of Honor when I come back. And then there's many other things that are all in the works, and you just never know what's going to happen. But definitely stay on the lookout, because I feel like good things are in the future.
I do too, absolutely. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been my honor and privilege to have you on the show, and I appreciate it so much. You have no idea. And thanks once again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Maria. Thanks a lot. That was Maria Canellis, the one and only Playboy Playmate, WWE Diva, former WWE Diva, and just one of the most popular recognizable divas of all time. Absolute awesome interview tonight. Thank you for everyone who tuned in. We've still got a lot of show left, including WWE Old School Raw. We got some TNA to talk. We've got an hour and 10 minutes left on the live show. Not sure if we're going to make it through the entire thing, but that was a great interview with Maria. If you want to call the show, give your thoughts on our interview with Maria or whatever else you want to talk about, please do so. The call-in number is 760-888-5749. So real quick, let's talk about the interview with Maria. Will, your thoughts on the interview with Maria tonight?
It was really great. It's cool to hear, you know, some great stories, you know, to hear from, you know, a former WWE talent and, you know, smart woman, you know, got a great opportunity. And just the fact that she can talk about it now and that she's going to be around the area, you know, that she's been here, you know, working in wrestling again. You know, she could have went all celebrity, but she went back into wrestling. And I think it's great that she found someone in wrestling. It's always good to hear that, too. So great interview. Loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. She was great. She's a class act. Every time I sent her a tweet about the interview or anything like that, she always retweeted it. You know, she always sent me something back. She was really quick on those emails to send back to me. She was really cool. John, your thoughts on our interview with Maria tonight?
Yeah, just, you know, between the two of them, you know, just awesome. I mean, you know, Mike was awesome when we had him on. She was awesome. She was awesome at FWE, you know, just getting to talk to her for a few minutes. And, you know, even, you know, here's a quick little thing. This is just how nice the two of them are. Mike wasn't out signing or anything during the autograph session, and I had went up to her, bought a picture, you know, got it autographed, you know, took a picture, and I had mentioned, you know, just wanted to let you know I was one of the guys on the show with Mike. As soon as she was done, she was like, you know what, let me go get him. And she went and got him. She stopped what she was doing, went and got him, and then Bennett came out, and, you know, between her going to get him and then him just giving me, like, 2 minutes of his time, it just shows, like you said, Jay, Bennett's a dick in his character, but he's just awesome as a person, and she is too, you know. So I really hope there's a lot of good things for both of them, and, you know, I hope we get some news soon.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, she was being very vague. Even when I said, you know, I saw her take a picture with Jeff Jarrett, does that mean anything?
Let's hope that
she
doesn't mean nothing.
About that either. Huh?
It would be a shame if she ended up in TNA and he ended up in WWE. They should go together. The two of them work.
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals where if you put them on TV together, it would just be natural chemistry because they're engaged in real life. There's no other way to put it. Like, real life.
Yeah, if they're on TV together, then Tara and Jesse are screwed.
She would be she would actually be a great way to introduce him and get him over.
Yeah, I could see Maria being Knockouts champion and Mike Bennett being TV champion. That'd be a great way to revitalize those, you know, stagnant titles if they were to go out.
They're not going to TNA.
believe it or not. I mean, let's just get this straight here because I want to talk about this a little bit later. We're going to do that in the second hour. But I just recently watched The Last of McGinnis, Nigel McGuinness's documentary, which was fantastic. And don't say that when someone, you know, has a WWE tryout and they're expected to go to WWE, don't always jump the gun on that. I mean, TNA could always slip in the back door if something with WWE falls through.
You need that thing to fall through.
You know, TNA is a pretty good consolation prize.
Yeah.
You know,
Austin Aries. You're the best example.
TNA is a consolation prize.
Well, it is a consolation prize. Austin Aries, like you just mentioned, WWE had no interest in him. He goes to TNA, and now he's, you know, more people know about him than ever before. But I truly believe, like honestly, Mike Bennett and Maria could be like Fandango and that chick that he was dancing with on stage last night.
No, it's
like,
not they, Fandango. It's Fandango.
Darn that.
We should have it out. One of these nights we should
have
had
that much
a fan,
night
a
in WCW.
we're gonna do a Fandango contest one of these nights. Who could say it the best? But that was actually funny since, you know, we're not officially in the second hour yet. My mom is actually on the line. I'm gonna bring my mom into this here. Hey, mom, what are you doing? What are you doing listening to the show, mom? What's going on?
Oh, hey Jay. I didn't know if you could pick up or not.
Oh, I picked up. When I see my mom on the line, I'm gonna pick up. How's it going, mom?
Oh, that's cool. I just wanted to call and, you know, say, hey, your show's going really good. I was enjoying the interview you had. And I was wondering if you were going to talk some more about, like, you know, some of the old-time wrestlers, like Johnny Rods and,
oh my God,
you know, people from way back, Bruno Sammartino.
Mom, I don't mean to cut you off there, but did you know that Bruno Sammartino is actually getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year at Madison Square Garden? And I'm going to be there. I'm going to.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm excited for you.
Yeah, I'll make sure I'll take a lot of pictures for you, Mom. And there's rumors circulating now that Arnold Schwarzenegger might actually induct him into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Arnold?
Yeah, Arnold.
What
I'll be back, Arnold.
What does Arnold have to do with it?
exactly my point. But
Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold, you can just point him in anywhere, and he's got everything to do with it. But, yeah, Bruno's going into the Hall of Fame. Actually, if you want to listen to the old-school wrestling conversation, we're actually going to talk about that on the other side of this break, because last night was WWE Old School Raw, and it was a big Raw. We saw the return of The Undertaker. We saw the Honky Tonk Man make a little cameo. We saw, you know, Teddy DiBiase on the show, the Million Dollar Man. It was absolutely awesome. So we're going to take a little short intermission. I'm just, you know, I got a little soundboard here with a couple songs on it. In honor of Jack Swagger's recent arrest, I'm going to play a nice little ditty for everybody out there. And let's hope I don't get sued. So, Mom, I'm going to put you back on hold. Put everybody on hold. And I'm going to hit the bathroom for a minute. So this is in honor of Jack Swagger getting arrested. And it is because I got high.
It's like I don't care about nothing, man. Roll another. Yeah. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out. I could have cheated and I could have passed, but I got high.
La da.
I'm taking it next semester, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next.
I was gonna go to work, but then I got high.
Ooh,
I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
La 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 da da da.
I was gonna go to court before I got high.
Ooh,
I was gonna pay my child support, but then I got high.
No, you wasn't.
La da da. They took my whole paycheck, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La la la. I wasn't gonna run from the cops, but I was high.
I'm serious, man.
I was gonna pull right over and stop, but I was high.
La da da.
Now I'm a paraplegic, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
La da da da.
I was gonna pay my car note until I got high.
Say what?
I wasn't gonna gamble on the boat, but then I got high.
La da.
Now the dump truck's pulling away, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
La da 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 da.
I was gonna make love to you, but then I got high.
Help me sing. I'm serious.
I was gonna eat your too, but then I got high.
Yeah,
because I got high.
Hey,
because I got high.
Hey, do that over.
higher life, because I got high. I lost my kids and wife, because I got high.
Say what?
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La 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 da da da. I'ma stop singing this song because I'm high.
Baby,
I'm singing this whole thing wrong because I'm high.
Bring it back.
And if I don't sell one copy, I'll know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I'm high.
Are you really high, though, man?
La da 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 da.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back here on PWP Radio. That was just a little bit of comic relief for all you guys. Of course, Jack Swagger, recently arrested a couple weeks ago on a DUI because he got high, whatever. But
that was stupid. He had possession of marijuana. He wasn't actually high.
Oh, he was totally high. No question about it.
You were there.
No. I was not there, but I have heard from numerous sources that Jack Swagger likes to smoke pot, and there is nothing wrong with that. I will say that completely, 100% true and honest. There is nothing wrong with that except for the fact that it's illegal. But
it's medically cleared in 2 states.
Right, exactly, and it should be medically cleared all over the place in the United States. But let's not talk about that. Let's not make it a political discussion. But what I do want to talk about is Jack Swagger, and Jack Swagger did not get really punished for this, as it seems. He's there in the thick of things. He still main eventing WrestleMania with Alberto Del Rio. He squashed a bunch of legends last night on Old School Raw. And let's just go around the panel and talk about this whole build-up with Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio and what has transpired throughout the weeks. So I'm going to kick it to Will first. Will, your thoughts on Swagger lately and this push he's getting, which happens to be pretty amazing in my opinion.
I actually think it's going very well. They just couldn't pull the – they had to keep going with it. It's WrestleMania season. They can't just pull the trigger on it, especially that it's getting a lot of political attention right now. WWE got, I wouldn't say bad press, but they got press, on this whole thing. And, they're being very careful on what they're saying and what they're doing to make sure it's not crossing a boundary. I don't think they've crossed any boundaries yet. I think they've been, they may be close to it, but they're not really pushing it that badly. WWE's done worse stuff before than this, so I can't really complain about it. But I think it's interesting because there's a lot of realism to the storyline. And I think, finally Jack Swagger is getting the recognition I believe he totally deserves. He's a talented guy, and I think I see something going forward with him. I wouldn't be surprised if he won the belt. As bad as that looks, I'll be surprised if he becomes champ.
I don't think it's going to happen at WrestleMania, but I think it could happen shortly thereafter because I think he's now in the title picture for the long haul, especially for the next, I'd say, 4 or 5 months, hopefully. This angle has the ability to go on for months and months, and it's even a topic that I have very strong beliefs on. Something that a lot of people don't know about me is I'm actually trying to become a U.S. Customs and Border Agent, and if that does happen, I will be over working on the Mexican borders and kicking some ass and everything down there. And it's a situation that, I am really invested in. And I think a lot of America is, especially, wrestling fans, because as, Glenn Beck and all these other guys were saying, the one great point they made is that this angle goes to the wrestling fan base. And although they see it in a negative light, I don't. I think it actually is something that they can relate to, because a lot of those, guys from the South and stuff are pretty miserable in general with their lives, and it's not to, whatever, what I'm saying. But Topher, let's kick it to you. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
I completely disagree with you guys. This angle is not getting over at all. The fans are just not reacting. It's been consistent reactions of just them sitting on their hands. They're not really booing Swagger or Zeb. They're just sitting there. The casual fans don't really understand it. I think us older fans, us more mature fans, we understand what's going on, and we may find it entertaining. But what matters the most is what the majority thinks. And I'm just seeing consistent reactions of nothing. They're getting no reactions at all. if you want to do something crazy, like I like to use the Nation of Domination as an example. Like when it first started, when Farouk was talking about, oh, how black athletes were being underlooked and stuff, like that was controversial at first. But then it started getting to the point where he started attacking his own people, like Ahmed Johnson saying, oh, you're not black enough, you're too white. You know, then it was starting to get crazy. And then NOD was just getting reactions every week. When Zeb Coulter cuts his promos, I don't feel like I should be insulted. I feel like I'm just watching Fox News. Del Rio himself, his comebacks are just generic. He's not really getting any strong reactions. I don't see any reason why I should care about this feud.
Well, it's still in the beginning phases. I mean, if you look at this whole angle, it's about a month long, maybe a little longer than that. It hasn't really gotten going necessarily. I mean, WrestleMania is still 30-something days away, and they have plenty of time to really get people emotionally invested in it. And what you're talking about when the crowd isn't really reacting, a lot of kids in the crowd, kids have no idea what's going on. These type of angles are mainly for the adults. And I remember, like, angles that would happen when I was a kid watching the 80s that I didn't get. Looking back now, I understand them when I watch videos and DVDs and stuff. But when, you know, Jake Roberts and Rick Rude are fighting over Jake Roberts' wife, and, you know, Rick Rude is legitimately banging Jake Roberts' wife, you know, I don't get that as a five-year-old or whatever. But a lot of the adults probably did at the time, and I think this is somewhat similar in structure, in storyline structure. JCD, what are your thoughts?
I think part of the problem, it's not Swagger and it's not, you know, Mantell. I think part of the problem is Del Rio has been uncharacteristically bad. In the Miz TV segment, Del Rio came off horrible. And then not really doing much last night, attacking Swagger from behind. Like you said, they've got five more shows to really build it up. And I really think it's going to get personal. I think they're going to generate heat when Swagger and Coulter destroy Ricardo. And you know that's coming. And that's what Ricardo is. Ricardo is that sympathy figure for Del Rio. And once that happens, whether it happens next week or the week after, you're going to see that heat. I do not see the same thing you see, Toph, with people not reacting to it. It's just right now they're going through the wrong areas when they were going through Texas and stuff like that to really get that type of reaction. Bring in a little more East Coast as we get closer to WrestleMania and you get some of those more Hispanic and Latino crowds, then you're going to really see the heat start to pour in. Add into the fact when, like I said, when they destroy Ricardo, which you know is coming, I think what has hurt Swagger as well is not having Mysterio there to beat him as a Latino star. He's still, you know, and even Sin Cara, that stuff needs to be steps in. And I said this after Elimination Chamber, that was the route he needs to go. But if you look at what he's done, he's beaten Orton, he's beaten Miz, he destroyed Duggan, Rhodes, and Slaughter last night. They're going the right way in building him, and it's going to work. And I'm with Will, and I said this to you guys from the start. I think he's going to win the world title at Mania. I really do. I could see it.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, it's possible for sure. There's no doubt about it. I think WrestleMania is still one of those shows that a lot of the baby faces are going to go over. The heels rarely win in the main events or whatever. But yeah, man, I think that this feud, like you said, John, it could really pick up once they hit, you know, a little more in Texas. I know they were just there, but they were in a completely different part. When they get closer to the border, maybe if they even go over it somewhere in that area. It's different from the Nation of Domination because that was a big stable. Who knows? Maybe this will slowly progress into a stable. Maybe there's somebody else that could be the catalyst to this entire angle that we haven't seen yet. There's still a lot of time to go. It's still in its kind of infancy, but I see where all you guys are coming from on this, and regardless of the fact, I think it'll be a good match at WrestleMania. I really think these guys will put on a pretty good show for us, but I see where you guys are coming from on both levels of it, but let's get right into the biggest news from Raw last night, old school Raw, the return of The Undertaker. Everybody saw it coming. I mean, I got a text message from The Undertaker himself. Me and Mark Calloway sent me a text message that said, I have risen. And I broke the news on Twitter. And I broke the news on the website. And I am the true news media wrestling site out there. Screw WrestleZone and Lords of Pain. It is me, damn it. Undertaker sent me a text message. But anyway,
he said
yeah,
you're
Undertaker.
Dead, Ramsey?
Undertaker comes out. Undertaker comes out. He says nothing. You know, just that's how they kicked off Raw. It was pretty cool. And it turns out it leads into a fatal four-way match, which I actually called that it would be a one-on-one match with my buddy. We were talking about it. Fatal four-way match. Basically, the winner faces Undertaker. Losers face the Shield. What were your thoughts on this match and how it played out, TLD?
Oh, you know, I didn't think it was necessary for the Fatal 4-Way at all. I don't know what that would have really done. I think that CM Punk, you know, he was already going to be the challenger. I mean, everybody knew that. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, the match was good. I thought CM Punk was trying to get the quick win, you know, very heelish way of trying to win that match, which I liked about it. But in the end, we all knew CM Punk was going to win that match. I just think that the match wasn't really necessary. But you know what? It still was a good match. And, you know, I liked how it built CM Punk's character, especially when he did the entrance, which was like a complete heelish thing to do. It was great overall. I think overall the whole presentation of it was good. But obviously I didn't think it was obviously necessary.
The match might not have been necessary, but don't you think it's a pretty cool main event for a show like this, John? I mean,
yeah.
You put four of your top guys in there to put on a pretty good match. I thought it was pretty solid, and you're able to create kind of two WrestleMania matches out of it. What were your thoughts on this, John?
Yeah, I thought, you know, at first I was like, why are they doing it? And then I realized that, you know what, Punk hasn't won anything pretty much since he beat Ryback in the TLC match on the first Raw of this year. So you know what, to have Punk get a GTS pin on Orton, I think it was important in that sense. So in that sense, the match made sense to me. I'm really looking forward to Punk on the mic with Taker. You know, the straight edge reference last night was nice coming out of the back pocket. I thought the match was good. You know, all four guys had presented a legitimate case for why they should be the guy to face Taker, you know, even though the outcome was predictable. And, you know, I liked it. I thought it was different. You know, I'd rather have had that four-way than have Cena and Rock, you know, oh, I need to beat you because my life's terrible. I banged a porn star because of you, you know, all that garbage.
Oh, oh, man. Miss Kendra Lust. Ooh-wee. Topher, man, what are your thoughts?
I thought pretty much agree with you guys. I thought the match was pretty much unnecessary. Going in, we all pretty much knew it was going to be CM Punk. I mean, CM Punk came out immediately after Taker left, so there was no doubt in anyone's mind. It was cool to see Punk get a pin on Orton, though, because one of my main beefs is Punk never really got that victory over Orton in a top feud. You know, I always felt that Punk could have had a little mini feud with Orton when he was champion, but, you know, that's just me nitpicking. But I thought it was kind of weird that Vicky Guerrero just kind of booked the match. Like, normally is someone that challenges Taker for the streak, or Taker challenges someone else, but Vicky Guerrero just kind of booked the match, and it was like, oh, doesn't Taker have a say on this? You know, I thought that was kind of silly, but yeah, the match was okay.
Yeah, who knows? Like, maybe Undertaker doesn't have a say. I mean, like any other professional wrestler on the roster, they don't really have a say in who they're going to fight. In the storyline. But
yeah.
I think it was kind of cool in the sense that it added to the streak a little bit. I mean, back when Shawn Michaels was trying to go for the streak the second time, when he really wanted to face The Undertaker and there was all these roadblocks in his way. Remember, he had to, because The Undertaker was champion, he had to win the Royal Rumble. And then he didn't. So then he had to make sure Undertaker lost at Elimination Chamber. And what happened? He did. He made sure Undertaker lost. Chris Jericho won the strap, and he went on to fight Taker at WrestleMania. That made the streak mean so much because Shawn Michaels would do anything to get that second opportunity at it. It wasn't like, you know, although I marked out for the matches, I thought the matches were good, it wasn't like with Triple H and The Undertaker recently where they both come out and kind of look at the sign. You know what I mean? And that's how they make the match. Although I thought that was a cool moment, it just didn't give the streak a lot of meaning. Having a match with that acting kind of like a title, probably second to what the WWE title is at this point, I think that made it mean a little bit more. And speaking of the WWE title, this is a very controversial topic right now in professional wrestling. Maybe controversy isn't the right word. Maybe it's just debatable a lot of people are on different sides of the fences on it. And, you know, The Rock versus John Cena is cemented now as your WrestleMania 29 main event, MetLife Stadium. And I'm pretty pumped to see it, especially live. I think it's going to be awesome. If you want to call in, get your voice heard on Rock vs. Cena, 760-888-5749 is the number. No matter what your opinion is, please call in. Talk to us about The Rock versus John Cena for the second time in 2 years. It's going to be, you know, one of those things where it'll draw a big buy rate. It's going to be a pretty solid match, but I don't know. A lot of people are on different sides of the fence with it. And I'm going to kick it to Topher first because I know that you're very, very critical of this. And let's hear your thoughts right now as it's cemented on the not only the match itself but the segment that we witnessed last night between the two.
Well, I just want fans to know and listeners as well that I have nothing against Rock Cena 2. I called Rock Cena 2 like a year ago. You know, most of us did when they announced the location of Mania 29 and Cena challenged Rock to a rematch regardless of the outcome. I knew right then and there Rock Cena 2 was going to happen. So I'm not one of those fans that's angry at the fact that we're seeing this match again. I'm okay with that. I always knew the end game was going to be Rock versus John Cena with the title on the line. My beef is this tagline of redemption versus greatness, and that's just a load of, you know what, John Cena has absolutely nothing to redeem. There's no defeat in his character from the kayfabe point of view, and we explained this several times. Even though he didn't have a good year last year, he still won Superstar of the Year. Even when he's not champion, he's still main eventing. He's always the center focus of the show. John Cena is basically entering Hulk Hogan territory, where from 1983 to 1993, it didn't matter what Hogan was doing, he was the central focus. Fans were angry last year about Rock and Cena main eventing, yet I remember one of my very first WrestleManias was WrestleMania 8, and Hulk Hogan versus Sid Vicious, that was the main event. Meanwhile, the world championship between Ric Flair and Randy Savage was in the mid-card. My beef against John Cena is he has nothing to redeem. If he wins, he wins. If he loses, he still wins. He cut that empty arena promo last year about how much this match means to him and how if he loses the match, it'll ruin him. Like, the way they cut the promo, they made it seem as if Cena lost the match, he was either going to A, go heel, B, retire, or just do what TNA's doing with AJ Styles and just have him disappear for a while. He loses the match, and he's the same. Every single few the use of Cena, there's no change in his character at all. There's nothing believable about him. So let's use the worst-case scenario. Let's say John Cena beats The Rock. Then what? What does that do for him? What does that do for the company? It doesn't do anything. It doesn't change his character. It doesn't make the fan base any bigger or larger. And if The Rock beats Cena for a second time, Cena's still not going to turn heel. There's no positive direction. This is just a match for a pay-per-view buy rate, and that's it. It does nothing for the future. It does nothing. It's just a match for a big pay-per-view buy rate. That's all it is. That's all it is.
All right, TLD, let's hear your opinion on this topic.
I think Tim is very upset. That's what I think. You know, it was a good promo last night. That's a good point. You know, what is John Cena felt like he had the worst year of his life last year. You know, which in a way he did, because he didn't really win anything last year. So, but, yeah, it didn't hurt his character by losing, where AJ Styles, when he lost that match, he's completely, like, gone. And it's kind of like you're seeing a change in AJ Styles, which is probably why there's an end game in it. So I could see that, you know, being the reason. But, you know, it's going to be a great main event. I think it's going to be better than their first one. I think they have to do better than their first one. And if John Cena does some dirty tactics to try to win, then you know what? Hey, you know, we get something good out of it, but we can't assume he's not going to be, we can't assume that. But, you know, I don't know. I'm looking forward to the match, though. I mean, the fact that I'm getting to see it live, I think, is my favorite part about it. I mean, if I wasn't seeing it live, I guess it's a different opinion, I guess.
That adds to the spectacle for me a bit, seeing it live and in person. But I also like that they have a chance to kind of do it again, you know what I mean? Just have another match, go better than the last one, and you're talking about the two biggest stars in the company going at it. And, you know, it, as from what it seemed like, The Rock is going to work, more pay-per-views down the line. You know, they already said he's going to be at WrestleMania 30. Who knows if he's going to do SummerSlam or Survivor Series or Royal Rumble again on the way there. But having The Rock is always a win situation for me. How about you, John? What are your thoughts, my man?
I think hell's about to freeze over because I actually agree with Toph here. Yeah, nothing's going to change. He's absolutely right. Unless they do something completely crazy, off the wall, nothing's going to change. And it's like I said, and I wrote a few, you know, I even wrote an article on this, what do you do with the WWE title after WrestleMania? Nothing's going to change. Cena's going to carry the belt, and, you know, it's going to be AAs to everybody, STFUs to everybody, and it's, you know, the only thing that's going to change with Cena is he's going to get a new colored shirt at WrestleMania.
So you're going to buy
it? No. But, you know, Toph's right. Nothing's going to change with them. Rock's going to go off, and he's going to cut whatever, you know, finally, blah, 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 promo the night after WrestleMania, and he's going to be gone. And he's going to show up whenever it's convenient for him. And, you know, and we're still staring at a Rock Cena rubber match to break the tie.
Yep.
There's already rumors of Rock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. So we already know what Rock's doing, and odds are Rock Lesnar is not going to go on at 9:30 at WrestleMania 30. So, you know, and Cena's probably going to be in the WWE title picture again. What do you do? They need to have something, excuse me, that is going to immediately happen after Cena pins Rocky that's going to keep you captivated. And I've said this, what does Cena do April 15th? Because that is the Raw after the night, after the Raw the night after WrestleMania. And that's where nothing's going to be different. And they better hope there is, because if there's not, and we deal with a year of Johnny Boy going through everybody, it's going to suck.
Well, that's
the only positive. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Charles. Go for it.
I was going to say, the only positive I can see out of this, and this is just me being, you know, optimistic. I posted this on a few forums, and a lot of fans have agreed with me. You know, a lot of us have come to the conclusion that Cena's going to win, and that is the most for likely conclusion. But for the sake of argument, let's say that The Rock wins. The Rock beats John Cena twice, 2 years in a row. The only positive I see is John Cena's frustration of his inability of beating The Rock at WrestleMania will eventually start a heel turn, which we all know is not going to happen. But if you look at The Rock's Hollywood character, outside of the Hollywood gimmick he had that made him turn heel, one of his main motivations for turning heel was he was jealous because Stone Cold Steve Austin won Superstar of the Decade, and he fought Steve Austin at two WrestleManias, and he lost. The Rock was obsessed with beating Steve Austin at WrestleMania, and that was one of the things that made him turn heel to begin with. So what if The Rock just becomes that guy that John Cena just cannot beat at WrestleMania, and that, you know, that frustration eventually turns him into a disgruntled heel. You know, and I could go with that. Now, we know that's not going to happen, but I'm just saying that's the only positive I can see out of this. But, yeah.
Well, the problem is with that, Toph. I'm
sorry, John.
That's a great point, and, you know, yeah, that was the main catalyst for the Rock's Austin feud. The problem is, though, how do you turn heel against a guy that's probably not going to be back until December?
True.
You know, I get what you're saying, but, you know, Dwayne's not going to be around after April 8th. So, you know, what's the point? Cena could turn around and say, I hate him, but you know what? I'll still be your Boy Scout and take on CM Punk, take on The Shield, take on Ziggler.
Well, see, I think The Rock will be around a little more than you guys think, because he's got that show debuting at TNT, and that's going to be something he's going to want to plug the living hell out of, for sure. So I think he'll be around this summer, whether it's for 1 week, 2 weeks, whatever, I think. But I don't see John Cena turning heel, although I like the scenario. I think it's cool. I think it could really work. I just don't see it happening at all, because right now, if you look at the babyface side, you know, if you take John Cena out of that equation, he's really not that strong. It's really, really bad if you pull John Cena out of the babyface side on the WWE roster. It's really not that good. But with John Cena, it is. And I really think Randy Orton's the guy that could turn heel. But, yeah, you know, either way, no matter what happens, It's going to be a hotbed topic for the next 30-something days, the next 5 weeks, and we are going to be talking about it constantly. So get ready, everybody, because it is going to be Rock versus Cena Mania up until the big show, WrestleMania. Now, switching gears a little bit from – well, first of all, before I completely close the door on Raw, let me go around the table here and just get your final thoughts on Old School Raw. It was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it. So, TLD, what were your thoughts and anything you want to talk about from Old School Raw?
Well, what I was very happy with, I got to see the Honky Tonk Man. I just met him at a PWS show, so that was pretty cool to see him on there. You know, I thought he didn't have a really good relationship with the WWE, so that's why I was a little surprised that he was on the show. But that was pretty cool to see him on there. And, you know, the New Age Outlaws, I mean, they, my God, you know, how awesome did they look last night? And, you know, they brought up some really awesome facts. That was the first time in 13 years they've tagged at WWE, you know. So that's a pretty cool moment. And I think that, I mean, from what I'm hearing, it looks like they're going forward with more of them, so, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. And the thing about Honky Tonk Man is, why the hell was his hair like that when we met him? When we met him, he was all like kind of haggard. He didn't do his hairdo up. And that's like the main thing that is awesome about the Honky Tonk Man. You know, when I saw him, I got a picture with him and stuff. I was always a big fan of Honky Tonk Man. He was one of those guys that you really, really loved to hate, you know, big time. But it was cool seeing him, and he actually was able to get over a little bit of babyface. But I would have loved to hear him sing his song for the crowd. JCD, final thoughts on Old School Raw last night?
Old School Raw, let me give a pass for the 20th anniversary Raw. Between Raw 1000 and last night, I'm willing to forgive them for January 14th. I thought it was a good show. All the idiots were saying, oh, don't expect much, don't expect much. I feel that we got a lot for WrestleMania, not just Punk, Taker, and Triple H, Lesnar, but it looks like we're going to get Ryback, Mark Henry. It looks like we're going to get that six-man with the Shield. So I thought we learned a lot about where certain guys are headed for WrestleMania last night. So I thought it was a good show. I really did.
And Ziggler lost again. So, I mean, I think they're heading towards that Money in the Bank cash-in maybe sooner than later, because this is the same type of route that other superstars have taken while they've held that briefcase. So, Toph, final thoughts on Old School Raw.
Yeah, the best part of Old School Raw was the commercial where they said one of the best-selling DVDs was The Best of Nitro, a WCW Nitro, a bestseller. What does that tell you, Vince? Yeah, good show, though. Good show.
Funny you brought that up, because I remember there was another commercial for a DVD, and it's the Bret Hart Dungeon DVD that's coming out soon, and I think it just came out today, actually. Yeah, it came out today, dropped today. But I laughed, because it was like this commercial with Sheamus, like, lifting weights, and he was, like, really hitting it hard, hitting the gym, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. Maybe it's going to be, like, a special on these guys lifting weights, because I'm into that kind of stuff. I'd love to see how Sheamus trains. You know, and then all of a sudden it's like, and when Sheamus relaxes, he sits on his couch and he is watching the stupid Bret Hart DVD. I'm like, what the hell? What the hell kind of commercial is that for a Bret Hart DVD?
I wonder what Bret Hart rates.
4 out of 10.
Four out of 10, easily. 4 out of 10. No question about it. all right, so that was Old School Raw. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun show, man. The matches were pretty good. The matches that weren't good were entertaining. So it was fun all around. But
and
I want to switch gears. Huh?
And the Miz won.
Oh, the Miz, yeah. The Miz he actually learned how to do the figure four correctly. You know, that was good. He locked down a good one on Dolph Ziggler for once. But I want to switch gears completely and talk about a subject that just kind of, you know, I know about it. I haven't really talked about it publicly a lot, and that is the documentary I just watched the other night by Nigel McGuinness. It was called The Last of McGuinness. It was about his retirement tour, you know, the end of his career, which sadly came to a halt due to circumstances that transpired while he was on the TNA roster, without really talking about it right now. But I want to put this DVD over completely. I think everybody should go out of their way to watch it, because it wasn't really life-changing, in my opinion. It didn't change, you know, my life at all. But what it did was kind of change my perspective on professional wrestling just a little bit. I kind of was able to see it through his eyes and what he went through, and how he is one of the most unlucky wrestlers that has ever been, you know, on the planet, that has been high profile, besides maybe Owen Hart. Bad joke, hashtag. Yeah, Nigel McGuinness's documentary was fantastic. Absolutely awesome. First of all, I know you've seen it, Toph, and let's just get your thoughts on Nigel McGuinness's documentary, The Last of McGuinness.
Oh, yeah, it was a great documentary, and I learned a lot from it. I'm a huge fan of Nigel McGuinness. He really, a lot of fans out there really don't understand how much he helped the wrestlers in the European market, you know, all those guys like Wade Barrett and Sheamus. He opened the door for so many of them, and it's very unfortunate what happened. I mean, he pretty much hit the nail on the head. He was very, very unfortunate. I actually met him at a TNA house show many years ago, and, you know, he had a really, before his abrupt departure from TNA, he was going to form a tag team with Magnus, and I think her name was Chelsea, the valet that was with him. And they were called London Brawling, and they were pretty over, and they were going to have a great tag team feud with the Motor City Machine Guns, but then they just pulled them out of nowhere, and I was really concerned because TNA wasn't saying anything, and I knew if the company wasn't saying anything, then it had to be something serious, and I've been following his career for a long time, and I figured it was something like that, but it was one of those things you didn't want to post in a public forum because you didn't want to air anyone's dirty laundry. But yeah, it's a very good documentary, and I definitely recommend you guys check it out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. First of all, Will, have you seen The Last of McGuinness? Have you seen this documentary?
I'm sorry, I have not seen anything about that DVD at all. I just know that Eric, one of our good friends, was part of that. That's all I know about it.
Yeah, Eric from Wrestling Roundtable. You can check them out on youtube.com/WrestlingRoundtable or WrestlingRoundtable.com. I got word that their show might be coming to an end soon, so definitely check them out. But Eric is just a very, very good video producer. He helped with the Wrestling Road Diaries that Colt Cabana and Daniel Bryan star in. And he was a big part of helping out Nigel put this documentary together. And what this was it chronicled the final weeks of Nigel McGuinness's in-ring career in professional wrestling. Right now, he's lucky he's got the role of the authority figure in Ring of Honor, which is a great role for him since he's no longer actively competing. But how about you, John? Have you seen this documentary or heard anything about it?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard the gist of it and the key points of it. I haven't had a chance to really order anything new, obviously, with everything else I have going on and coming up. So
absolutely.
But you know, maybe this summer, you know, once you know he's born and you know things cool down a little, I can get my hands on it and you know. Hopefully, maybe pull myself away for a couple of hours and watch it. But I've heard all the main points and all the turns with it and everything about it. But I actually want to see it.
Yeah, you definitely need to. And this is what I want to talk about mainly. And it's the main focus point of it. You know, we all heard about what happened with WWE when Daniel Bryan got signed by WWE. When he came in, Nigel McGuinness went with him. They both ended at Ring of Honor the same night and had a fantastic match in New York City. Both
against each other, right?
The company. Against each other, yeah. I was there. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. It was, you know, one of those things where it was one of those moments you'll never forget being at a wrestling show. You know what I mean? It was just an awesome match, and they had a great speech afterwards, put each other over like crazy, and they were both heading to WWE. And basically what happened was is when Nigel McGuinness was in Ring of Honor, he hurt his arm. He tore his bicep because he threw this ridiculous clothesline. He threw it like he was swinging an effing baseball bat, you know, with his left arm. And he would smack people. It was like one of the most stiff clotheslines you'll ever see. You want to talk about JBL's clothesline being stiff?
Mm-hmm.
This one was just as stiff, if not stiffer, than JBL's. And he hit this freaking clothesline in every match multiple times. Well, eventually, his bicep basically tore. And what happened was, instead of having surgery, which the poor son of a bitch, he couldn't afford surgery. I don't blame him. His doctor said it was fine if it healed on its own, scarred up, and he'd be fine to go, you know, with just rest and rehabilitation. And to me, that makes sense. But what happened was when he was getting signed by WWE, you have to go through this physical process. And there were so many rumors going around at the time about why he did not get signed. But the fact of the matter is, the reason he didn't get signed was because his arm never had that surgery. And he wouldn't get the surgery, even though his doctor said he didn't need it, whatever. WWE was like, you have to get the surgery or we're not going to sign you. You know, he didn't get signed. Sucked. TNA picked him up. And this is what I mainly want to talk about. I just ranted a little bit about that story. But the reason he kind of abruptly left TNA is because somehow he got hepatitis B. The guy never did any drugs, never shared needles. didn't have unprotected sex. The only conclusion he comes to with how he got hepatitis B was, you know, somehow in the wrestling ring. And this leads to what I want to talk about for the next few minutes, and that's bleeding in professional wrestling. And, you know what, blood is something that has added to a lot of matches throughout the years, especially back in the old days. NWA, there were some big matches in WWE that had blood involved, bleeding, just gushing cuts that really added to the drama. You know, and Crimson Mask, you always hear JR saying, good God almighty, Crimson Mask or whatever, bleeding like a stuck pig, all these terminologies that just don't exist anymore in the world of WWE. And for a while, I was like, what the hell, man? Why can't blood be in wrestling? Blood adds so much to it. But not everybody. But after just listening to Nigel and the tough break he got about this, it literally ruined his career. You know, in TNA, and I got to say this real quick. I tweeted Hulk Hogan about why Nigel didn't get his fair share in TNA, why he got let go. And basically, Hogan responded to me, and it's pretty cool getting a response from your idol, you know. Hogan responded that, you know, brother, I was 50-50 on Desmond. I was, you know, I was a fan of his, but I was impartial. And he said that he was trying to get the agents to teach him how to not outshine the baby faces, and that's ultimately what led to his release. But I don't really buy it 100% because, you know, the hepatitis B was the reason why he was off TV. But hepatitis B, he's cured of it. He doesn't have it anymore. It's one of those deals that you can get vaccinated for it and you can get cured. But bleeding in wrestling, let's talk about this. I'm going to kick it to you, TLD. Do you think blood in wrestling is something that's absolutely necessary?
It depends on situations. I can tell you right now, coming from being a pro wrestler, no wrestler wants to bleed. I can tell you that right now. They don't. And in the business, you know, when I was learning how to do pro wrestling and learning about bleeding and taking that, one thing that I learned was people were cutting themselves open in front of people who are in front of fans that are about 80 or 40 people. Why would you bleed yourself and put yourself in a situation for 40 fans? As great of a match you may have, you're bleeding yourself in front of 40 fans. And you know what? It's not worth it in the independent scene. I think the independent scene depends on it. It's all about ECW. I mean, before ECW came along, WWE would do it sparingly. They wouldn't do it that often. The first time I saw blood was when I saw Sergeant Slaughter versus Hulk Hogan. That was the first time I saw blood where Hogan was busted open from Sarge. And then I saw it with Bret Hart and Roddy Piper. And, you know, it wouldn't happen often. But then when ECW came along, I'm like, God, people just want blood. And I'm like, I don't believe in that. I don't think blood is necessary at all. I think ECW made it necessary in the Attitude Era more specifically. I just don't feel blood is needed, especially when you don't do it in front of a lot of people. I just think that looks silly. You know, why would you bleed for these people? You know, are they going to come back? No, they're not. I hate to tell you, they're not. You know, if you are going to bleed, do it where it makes sense, and do it when it's safe, and do it when you have one of the biggest audiences you can possibly have to leave a mark. But you don't leave a mark in front of 100 and 200 people in an ECW arena. I'm sorry. You just don't do that. I just don't see it being necessary, which is why I never once in my day as a professional wrestler, and still won't today, bleed unless it was absolutely necessary to tell a story. And if there was a time where they said, hey, Will, we want you to bleed in this one, I'd be like, you know what? I need to know why, and it would have to make sense. You know, anytime I used blood, it was always fake. Other than that, I never cut myself once.
Well,
that ain't fun to have marks in your head. You know how many wrestlers have marks in their heads because they bleed so many times?
Yeah, look at Devon.
Look at Bubba Ray. I see Steve Corino's head. I've seen, you know, all these people's heads with all their busted up, you know, top heads. And honestly, what did it get them? That's what I try to figure out. What was it for? You know, is it for the love of the business? I understand that. I get that. You know, but the love of the business ain't getting you anywhere. You're still doing independent wrestling. You still have to, you know, you have to make something. You have to make money out of this, you know. We're here to make money, right? That's what professional wrestling should be about. Not just the love of it. There's got to be some money involved. You know, and honestly, is it worth the money? Is it worth going three divorces? Is it worried about, you know, constantly traveling? You know, you got to think about those things. You know, especially that's why they stopped doing it.
Well, that's the thing, too, is Nigel has no idea how he got hepatitis B. He doesn't know. He's just assuming that it came from wrestling and getting blood from somebody.
I have a skin condition that I was in the hospital for days for, and I had a red streak going up my arm all the way down my body. I felt like my arm was, like, working out all the time, and I ended up going to the hospital for it, and it's because, and I don't know where it came from, but my gut tells me it's because of the mat on the ring. My skin was touching the mat of the ring all the time with all that sweat and all that blood, you know, touching it all the time. And now I have a skin condition that I cannot lose. I have it for the rest of my life that pops up here and there, but it's annoying and it sucks. And this is, you know, part of, I can relate to why, you know, Nigel is the way he is, because I have the same condition now that has something on my arm where it pops up and looks like it's herpetic. So
yeah, that sucks, man.
Yeah,
that
it does.
Sucks. I didn't know that.
Fun.
That blows.
And for what? Yeah, it sucks. You know, I get that. I got cold sores in my mouth now, and I believe, to my knowledge, it's going to have something to do with me doing wrestling.
Yeah, you know, that makes all the sense in the world. And, you know, the tragedy with Nigel McGuinness is that he was so close to having that WWE contract. He was so close. When he debuted in TNA, like the day after his WWE contract fell through, you know, he was in there with Kurt Angle having fantastic, amazing matches. But as soon as Hogan came in and took over, before you know it, like these you know, old school WWF guys like Val Venus and Nasty Boys and Jimmy Hart or whoever were just outshining him and got more TV time than him just almost immediately, and he never got his fair shake. So, John, let me kick it to you about this blood and wrestling issue. What are your thoughts on blood and blading in professional wrestling?
Like Will said, it's got to have a place. And back in the old days, and, you know, I mean, I've been watching since 85. The big blood matches and the feuds that built up over time, it's okay for. But now when you get the same match two or three times in a month and then you get it on a pay-per-view, what's the point of it? It's not. I understand, you know, you have more testing now. You can find out who's got what. You can treat things now. I get that. But it's just, it's not, you can't rely on everything. People are irresponsible. Heck, look at Cowboy Bob Orton, you know, 6-7 years ago in that Armageddon Hell in a Cell match with Taker and Orton. He had hepatitis C. Didn't tell Undertaker. Orton Senior's busted open. Taker's punching him, you know, with the glove, with the half hands out, and then Taker finds out afterwards, and then everyone wonders why Taker wanted to kill Orton, you know, after that. And why did Orton get fired? Well, because he had Hep C and he didn't tell anybody, and he was putting people at risk. You don't need it now. You know, if it happens accidentally, it's fine. Like with Lesnar, last week, it's fine. But you don't need these big, you know, do you need a big blade job during Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, part 75?
No, you don't. Absolutely not. And that's a great point you brought up with Bob Orton, because I wanted to talk about that too. Hepatitis C and hepatitis B are completely different. Like, hepatitis C, Bob Orton has that for the rest of his life. He's not getting rid of that. Hepatitis B is something that Nigel had, and he's gone. He's completely clear of it now. But the problem was, you know, TNA gave him some time to get rid of it, and this was all something that wasn't talked about. And I really hope you guys don't watch this DVD, because I'm not giving the entire story here. But pretty much as soon as he got cleared to wrestle, he got cleared to wrestle like a week after he got fired from TNA. And that sucks. Like, you want to talk about bad luck in the business. Like, Nigel McGuinness is a guy who could, like, we talked about a little bit last week, John. I think it was last week when we said, you know, Nigel could have been Wade Barrett. Hell, he could have been better than Wade Barrett, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that,
yeah. He would be better. He'd be in that spot and better. And that's what sucks, is this guy is so good, but it's a tragic story that is kind of turning around and getting better.
That's
for him.
Why I know he's your boy and everything, but that's why I don't buy Hogan on it. If you really wanted him back and he got cleared a week later, you would have brought him back.
That's the thing, though. Like what Hogan said, and Nigel kind of said this in the documentary, he said that, you know, they wanted him to stop being better than the babyfaces, because Hogan was bringing this old-school feel back to TNA. That's what he wanted to do in the beginning.
I think I know where that comes from.
Go ahead. What do you got?
When Hogan first came in, you know, there were a lot of concepts they tried to bring in TNA in 2010 that were ultimately dropped. And I remember this particularly. It stands out in my mind. I still have it on DVR. When RVD was champion, they had tried this concept, I don't know if you guys remember, where they told the fans to go to the Impact Wrestling website and they wanted you to vote for who was going to be RVD's opponent. You guys remember that?
Yes.
Yes.
And when and Desmond Wolfe won, and when RVD came out, he got a great reaction. And this is like when TNA was live for a short period on Mondays. And then when Desmond Wolfe, a.k.a. Nigel, came out, he got a huge pop too. And the crowd was just like 50-50, and I think that was not the reaction that Hogan wanted because, you know, RVD had just came in, he was fresh off, because he had been a free agent for a while, and he wanted RVD to be that top guy, but, you know, the fans were just into Nigel, and, you know, when he was feuding with Angle, the fans were 50-50, half of them were cheering for Kurt, and the other half were cheering for Nigel, and basically, when they had the Fortune thing going on, they were trying to make AJ, Bobby Roode, James Storm, and Kazarian the central focus, but Nigel, again, was just getting more pops. You know, fans were into Nigel. He was getting consistent reactions. And, you know, it wasn't that Nigel was doing anything to make the fans pop. The fans just loved him.
Yes,
you know, when you
Nigel.
See a guy that busts, you know, as you know what, in the business, and you fans respect him and they cheer him. And I just think the consistent, you know, reactions just kind of annoyed TNA Creative. And I know where you guys are coming from because, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what Hogan said to kind of clarify is that he was just neutral on the whole thing. And I know you don't buy it, but I kind of believe him on it because why he didn't have to respond to me in any way, shape, or form. I didn't even directly ask him. I just mentioned his name in the tweet because I was saying that I think Nigel had money written all over him. And Hogan just basically told me he was neutral and that it was in the agent's hands. And I get that because the agents, it's their jobs to kind of mold the wrestlers to the style that they want. And here's the exact quote from Hulk Hogan that he gave to me on Twitter. And he goes, "I was neutral on Desmond. He was in the hands of the agents trying to get him to stop outshining the baby faces. Great potential." And I think he means that. I think that's true. And maybe he didn't, you know, maybe he wasn't getting through to outshine the baby face. Maybe it wasn't happening. But why the hell didn't they just turn him face? Just do what the crowd wants.
Turn that guy into
a baby face.
They were cheering him anyway. They should have just done that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
you know, he can work that. That's when he became Ring of Honor champion. He was a babyface when he became Ring of Honor champion. And he also, when I praised his DVD on Twitter, and he retweeted me and responded to me as well. So, you know, I just want to say, Nigel McGuinness, you know, I love the movie. It was fantastic. I hope it gets picked up at these film festivals. And, you know, I just hope more people see it. And if me saying it helps a couple people go out of their way to see it, then I hope it does. And any final thoughts on the blood situation in wrestling? I hope I really didn't get your thoughts on that.
Pretty much what you guys said. I think when blood matters, it should be used. But other than that, no. I mean, there are some exceptions. Last year at Bound for Glory, James Storm and Bobby Roode had a very great street fight, but it was very bloody. And they've had their fair share of matches, though the story did call for the blood. But still, it had been such a long time since I had seen blood. I remember when I was watching that match live, I was questioning on whether or not the match really needed blood. I was distantly thinking about Bret Hart versus Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13. I definitely do think that you don't need to see blood like a regular match, you know, that's been between the same people over and over. But I agree that it should definitely be at a big show where it matters, and when it means something, you just shouldn't use it, you know, at a house show or at a very small arena with only 100 people or something. So, but I don't believe that you need blood to necessarily make wrestling violent. You know, wrestling can still be cool and not be blood. And I do believe that, what you guys said, ECW did kind of start that, especially Tommy Dreamer and Raven and Sandman and all those guys.
Yeah, they made it just commonplace. And another thing I want to say is if you're a wrestler and you plan on bleeding, go get your hepatitis B shot, get your vaccine. It's something that Ring of Honor does now. They, when Nigel came back to the company, you know, there was a big meeting, and he told the locker room, because he's not only just the on-air, whatever, figurehead, but he's, you know, he works with the wrestlers. He does little agent duty here and there, so he's got some pull backstage. He said, no more, there's no more blood in Ring of Honor. No more. It just doesn't happen anymore. They're done with it. And he told all the wrestlers, go get your vaccine for hepatitis B, especially if you're working the rest of the independent scene. Like Will said, you don't know where these masks have been. You don't know if they're clean. You don't know who's wrestled on them. You don't know how it could happen to you. And it could be career-changing or life-changing, like what happened to Nigel McGuinness. So I really hope you go out of your way and check out that DVD. It's called Last of McGuinness. I may or may not have downloaded it, but I plan on buying it as soon as possible. So, I will purchase this DVD, no question about it. I'm going to purchase it. I'm going to give it my money. As soon as more come out, I heard that they're all sold out, but I don't know if that's a fact or not. But one other situation I want to talk about is another quick wrestling DVD that I just watched, another documentary that I may or may not have downloaded, and that is recently been released by HighSpots.com. They had a Kickstarter program, as with the Last of McGuinness, where fans were able to pitch in money to make this DVD happen, and it was on The Dynamite Kid. And The Dynamite Kid is one of those guys in wrestling who some people consider either the greatest of all time, but a lot of people just haven't seen enough of him to really consider him that way. His story was fantastic. I didn't like the DVD as much as I like Nigel's. The Dynamite Kid DVD had a lot of footage from the Hart family. You know, you saw like Bruce Hart, Keith Hart, Bret Hart. They were all talking about it. And you didn't really get as much from the Dynamite Kid in the little interview they had with him as you wanted to get. That's where I felt a little empty on it. However, the story was tremendous, fantastic. And I just want to talk about the Dynamite Kid for a minute. I'm going to kick it to TLD. TLD, are you familiar with the Dynamite Kid and his work in professional wrestling? And if so, what do you think of him?
You know, I did watch some of the Bulldog stuff. You know, I did watch it when I, you know, started, you know, being a little bit smarter about pro wrestling. And, you know, I got to be honest, he's someone that never stuck out. I'll be honest. I was a Bulldog guy. I really did like the Bulldog. But for me, you know, as many people say how great he is, I just did not connect to him. Something about him just didn't read me the right way. And maybe it's because I watched some stuff, documentaries and stuff like that, before I kind of was watching everything. I don't know. Just something about him just did not connect with me. I just don't think people make a bigger deal than it is. And, you know, he has some negative stuff to say on the business too, which isn't always a good thing either to say. So it doesn't really appeal to me when he's saying stuff negative.
Well, that's the thing about him is he was just bitter. And for certain reasons, I guess, He was going through a lot at that time when the business kind of turned on him, what he thought. But there's always been a place where there are so many people that admire him. And if you want to watch a great Dynamite Kid match, go on YouTube. All his great stuff is there from Japan. You know, in NJPW back in, I think it was like 1982, he had a match with Tiger Mask that I believe is must-see. If you want to watch a match that kind of paved the way and is like 25 years ahead of its time, you know, 20, 25 years, completely ahead of its time, go and watch that match. There's also some great matches where the Bulldogs take on the Malenko brothers and, you know, Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy, and there's just all kinds of stuff. There's great matches where Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith fight each other from New Japan. There's just a lot of stuff out there that a lot of people haven't seen on the Dynamite Kid. He was just an awesome, amazing professional wrestler, but like you said, there was a lot of negatives that came from him. John, what were your thoughts on the Dynamite Kid?
Looking back on him now, Will's right. He wasn't anything special then. Now he'd probably be the IWC and internet sensation. He would. He'd be another Daniel Bryan. He'd be another Benoit. You know, a guy like that. But then he was just a weird guy to try to connect with. You know, I remember as a kid. You know, I was more into Davey Boy. And then I was more excited when Davey Boy came back for the singles run. When Davey Boy came back, I never wondered where Dynamite Kid was. Although if Kid would have came back, I would have probably wondered where Davey Boy was, if that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense.
You know, so, you know, but nowadays I think his style would get over now with the guys that are, you know, a Brian, an AJ, you know, Styles, a Ziggler, you know, guys like that, even before, you know, Benoit and Eddie and even Dean Malenko and guys like that as well.
Yeah, if there was no Dynamite Kid, there wouldn't have been any of those guys. There would have never been a Chris Benoit. There would have never been you know, with Eddie Guerrero. And to take that a step further, if there wasn't a Chris Benoit or Eddie Guerrero, there probably wouldn't have been an AJ Styles or a Daniel Bryan. How about you, Toph? What were your thoughts on Dynamite Kid?
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with his work. It was before my time. All I know about him is that Benoit idolized him, and I know that he was in a tag team with a British Bulldog called the British Bulldogs, and I know they were pretty popular back in the day, but I'm not familiar with his work. But I'll definitely look it up after the show.
Yeah, dude, look it up. I'm not going to steer you wrong on this. Definitely watch his match with Tiger Mask. You're going to see things from, you know, 1981, 1980, 1982, back then, that today make people gasp. Like, oh my, like, you know, you'll be chanting, you know, holy shit or whatever, the stuff he did back then. It was just so far ahead of his time. And, yeah, he was bitter about what happened and stuff. And I don't know if you guys are familiar, but the one story that really sticks out from this documentary, and I'll put it over, I'll say, you know, I'd say go see it if you don't know about his career and what he did, and especially in Stampede Wrestling and how he came from England and whatnot. But one story is that he had a backstage altercation. He was a bully. He was a ripper. And he had an altercation with Jacques Rougeau, who we know as the Mountie, you know. And,
yes.
The Rougeau brothers. It was a deal where the Dynamite Kid was constantly picking on Jacques Rougeau because of a rib that Mr. Perfect pulled on Jacques, kept pulling this rib over and over and over again. But he had no idea Mr. Perfect was doing it. And because of this, he called Vince McMahon and ratted on the Dynamite Kid multiple times, thinking Dynamite was doing it. Well, Kurt Hennig went up to Dynamite and said, "Hey, Jax is calling Vince McMahon and ripping on you and telling Vince that you're ripping him and stuff." So what happened? Dynamite Kid started picking on Jax. You know, I think he like beat the shit out of him one time, like knocked him on the ground, put him in a headlock. You know, Ray Rougeau had to come to his rescue and stuff. And Ray had some kind of I know you guys are familiar with the Rougeau brothers. Ray had some kind of knee injury, couldn't really get physically involved. But what essentially happened was this happened for months after months on the road, and eventually the Rougeaus, they pretty much orchestrated a hit on the Dynamite Kid. And what they did was Jacques Rougeau went to the bank, got a roll of quarters, waited till the Dynamite Kid came up to him to pick on him, and what did he do? He punched him in the face as hard as he possibly could, knocked all the Dynamite Kid's front teeth out, and that pretty much was the end of the Dynamite Kid in the wrestling business in America. Like, he was done after that. He was still in WWF. It was after his giant, his horrible, like, back injury that he suffered, and he was still able to work here and there, but he was done, and that is the reason why he was so bitter on the business. Like, they pretty much slayed the dragon. He was such a river, such a tough guy, and Jacques Rougeau knocked the shit out of him with the roll of quarters in a staged hit. So, that's the Dynamite Kid. A big story about him, and I implore everybody who's not familiar with him and what he meant to the wrestling business to go ahead and check out his stuff on YouTube. But we've got about 2.5 minutes left, and TLD, I want to hear your final thoughts tonight on PWP Radio. Big interview with Maria, our first ever 2-hour live show. What were your thoughts, my man?
No, I really enjoyed the night. Good talk of wrestling tonight. And be safe to say, you know, we have our Brookwood4.com. Our web series is coming back for pro wrestling, so looking forward to that. And, you know, hopefully you'll see me again back in the ring.
Absolutely. And next week on the show live, we have none other than Mike Bucci, who you might know as Supernova or Simon Dean. And we're going to be talking a lot about WWE, WWE developmental, old ECW stories. He's going to tell us about his return to the ring coming up at Pro Wrestling Syndicate. He'll be wrestling both nights, one against the mystery opponent the next night, reforming his tag team with Chris Chetty for the first time in years. John, final thoughts tonight on PWP Radio.
Yeah, it was a great interview with Maria. Great interview, you know, talking about everything that's going on, WrestleMania. I'm a little disappointed we didn't get to touch on if Kurt Angle unmasks a guy and no one's there to see it, does it count? you know.
Oh, it counts. We have two more radio shows. We can talk about it.
Yeah, we'll probably get into this tomorrow night. And we've actually got now former Ring of Honor television champion Adam Cole tomorrow night. I know you didn't know with me and Seth. So that should be an interesting interview as well.
Absolutely. Who knows what that means, former Ring of Honor television champion. Toph, final thoughts tonight on the show.
Tonight's show was good. I think the 2-hour format works better. I have a question. Are we going to be doing any post-lockdown shows on Sunday?
Oh, I could. Hey, You want to do it, Will?
Absolutely. I'll definitely do it. We'll do it. Lockdown.
Okay,
time,
it's official.
Baby.
It's official.
Cool,
Sunday
thanks.
Night.
We're doing a live
lockdown post show. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been our biggest show yet. I appreciate you calling in, talking to PWP Radio. For TLD, for Topher, for JCD, and for the lovely, beautiful Maria Kanellis, this is Jersey Strong Jay signing off. Keep it real, everybody, and join us tomorrow night for our big interview with Adam Cole.
Later.